time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
To the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. A different kind of show today, ladies and gentlemen, if I'm still allowed to use the words ladies and gentlemen instead of listing every one of the 20 plus, 30 plus, 40 plus, I don't even know how many anymore, can't keep track, different kinds of pronouns and nouns and whatever's to use. But anyway, I'm going through some news, and yes, the news is depressing, but we're actually going to have some fun. At least, I think it will be fun. Whether it's fun for you, we'll see. Of course, there are different ways to respond to the heaviness and utter horror of all that is going on around us, especially in these past few months, and, of course, to a wider degree, these past 2 years with the pandemic, the shutdowns, everything. One way to respond, naturally, is prayer. Another way is to take a stand and speak out and refuse to compromise. Okay, those are the two most important ways. I shared them first because today, I'm not going to do those things. Actually, I'm just kidding. What I mean is that today I am responding a different way on the show, a way that still includes speaking out, actually, but sometimes in life, finding the humor underneath the painful irony can also be an important coping mechanism, helping us to go on, helping us to not feel so much stress. Stress can be so related to how we're doing physically. It can be so related to our health. The less stress, the better. So yes, believe it or not, while this will still be an all-news commentary show, it will also be, hopefully, a somewhat lighthearted show. First, current news, just a tad bit, just a microscopic amount. That's all we can stand of the news right now, correct? Then, a few brief spotlights of news from the past few years, mostly last year, but some back a little farther to see how it compares to the times we are living in today. Today, of course, is the age of social media. I'm not on all of them. I'm mostly on Facebook, Twitter, once in a blue moon, but mostly I interact on Facebook. Many of my news commentary on the radio, I first post on Facebook. And likewise, after I've completed the radio show, I'll go ahead and put a link of that back on my Facebook page, which means I get responses to my points both before they go on the air and then after they've already gone on the air. If that sounds confusing, never mind. Just move on. I was merely pointing out that it makes for some fun interaction, makes for an interesting life. Now, if you are also on Facebook, you know this. You know that one of its features is to send what they call memories of previous posts. Sometimes your own words from exactly a year ago today, or 2 years ago today, or 3 years ago today, goes on and on. I appreciate that about Facebook. Yes, you heard me correctly. I actually said something good about Facebook. I do appreciate that particular feature. It's fun to look back at something I once wrote, and I know then that I probably said it over the air too, and I go, hey, that wasn't bad. I forgot what a witty, clever guy I can be. Yes, an exercise in humility, to be sure. But it's also important to have that continuity to the past. Things predicted, news compared with the prediction. Because human behavior is extremely predictable, especially when it's involved with politics. Anyway, let's start in the present. Varying commentary on the southern border situation with your old pal Bob. I have just two quotations. The first from DHS Secretary Mayorkas. The second, Biff of Back to the Future fame. You remember Biff. We'll start with Secretary Mayorkas. Our borders are not open. Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Think, McFly, think. Well, no matter. Let's be fair. After all, you can't judge an administration simply by the southern border. There's a whole world out there affected by President Biden. For example, chew on this tasty morsel of headline. Biden's State Department condemns a recent North Korea missile test. That was a close one. Nothing to be concerned about here. Oh, North Korea must be shaking. No nation in their right mind would dare risk the wrath of President Biden. Why, it would be like facing off with the reincarnation of George S. Patton. Okay, from there, I'm going to segue to Facebook in the past. This time, 2 years ago, I was also talking about Joe Biden. He was running for president. They hadn't stolen him into office yet. He was merely a candidate and still a candidate within his own party, running for the party's nomination, getting into debates with other Democrat socialists. I'll read what I said about that and then keep on with other blasts from the past, varying subjects and varying amounts of time gone by again, mostly a year ago, some longer. Okay. September 2019. I wouldn't worry much about Biden's shady deal with the Ukraine. He probably remembers it as a deal he made with King George of England. 2020. Joe Biden. Do I look like a socialist? No, Joe, you don't look like a socialist. You don't look like a man who ever had an honest, consistent conviction about anything aside from a desire to be president. What you look like is a puppet who will do anything and say anything that the puppeteers pulling your strings command. As for what they look like, well, it doesn't matter what they look like. What matters is what they shamelessly call themselves, socialists. Yes, that was a year ago. That's what I said a year ago. You'll remember that they floated and paraded him around as a moderate. How do you like it? Has he ruled as a moderate? If you think the Biden administration since then has proven me wrong, I have some beachfront property to sell you in beautiful Gila Bend, Arizona. September 2015. We're going back a while. DOJ warns of possible criminal prosecution to those who criticize Islam on social media. Will they also prosecute Muslims who preach death to Israel and death to Jews? September 2018, regarding the Kavanaugh hearings, the Kavanaugh accusations, the same people who think all women should be believed also think one can be a woman in a man's body. So maybe Kavanaugh is really a woman and he should be automatically believed. Now, a little more recent, back now to September of 2020, only a year ago, here's something interesting. This time, Facebook gave me a reminder of something I had said about Facebook. Again, these resurrected comments from the past are what I like about Facebook, and they are fast becoming the only thing left that I like about Facebook. A year ago, at this time, Facebook changed its graphics, its look, its layout. Some liked it. Some couldn't stand it. I said in a post, if only instead of updating its look, Facebook had updated its fact checkers. All right, now, even closer to the present, only a couple of weeks ago, I decided to have some fun with Facebook. I wrote the following post. Should you take the vaccine for COVID-19? That question was immediately followed by, relax, I never told anyone not to take the vaccine. Just testing to see if one of those thoughtful, official Facebook messages about where to find correct information pops up under my post. That's what I said, folks. You know what I'm talking about. With any discussion on Facebook of the vaccine, a little tag of sorts appears right underneath your post. It says, visit COVID-19 Information Center for vaccine resources. And then that's followed by a link. Get vaccine info. Now, what followed later that day was stellar. I checked back later to look at my post. I did not see that tag immediately. Short time later, check again. Still don't see it. But not much time went by that morning before finally discovering the tag just as expected. There it was. However, by that time, there were also comments from several Facebook friends. So I'm looking at this piece of page. I see my post. I see Facebook's correction tag. I also see a comment from a Facebook friend named Tim, familiar to many of you as he often calls the show. Tim says, nope, no Facebook message. I write, really? Because I just now returned to Facebook on my iPhone and I'm staring at it right now. Previously this morning when I checked, I did not see it. Now, to be fair to Tim, this was just a timing thing. As I just mentioned, the first time I went back to check, I didn't see it either. So I know Tim said this innocently enough, but I mention it now only because of the humor and irony. Here I am expecting Facebook's usual due diligence. There's a comment saying that this time I might be mistaken because there's no message from Facebook, and yet the message from Facebook is there on my screen, on my post, while I read the comment saying that it's not there. It was such a choice moment. I had a screenshot taken just to preserve it for posterity in case Facebook ever gets embarrassed by this and takes it down. This was really one of those picture is worth a thousand words moments, what we used to call Kodak moments. By the way, Tim did acknowledge that he finally saw it. Tim's a good guy. Patty on Facebook said, yes, it's there. So did many others. It's all still there on my Facebook page. Go take a look. Yes, sir, my friends, all we have to do is ask a question with those two lightning-charged words about the vaccine, and the arrogant thought police fact-checkers are right there to help us. Their willingness to jump in and lend a hand when we haven't asked for any of their help taps into reservoirs of emotion. For many people, this is something deeply moving. So moving, it's moving people to other alternative social media. For myself, I'll stay with Facebook until or unless I get kicked off. What a great bunch of people they have there at Fascist Book. Facebook. Well, that's the news for today, the past, the present, the fact checked. This is Bob Siegel, hoping that maybe, just maybe, perhaps, in our brief pilgrimage together, the obvious was made obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Yes, pop culture, reviewing the arts, books, movies, plays, television shows. That is part of what I do in this program. From time to time, it's nice to take a refreshing break from the heavy issues of life or a break from politics and instead talk about my other passion, the arts. I am very passionate about the arts. Unfortunately, the line between politics and art is rapidly disappearing. For that reason, today will be part television review and part political social commentary. I'm going to begin by reading an article from The Federalist. Comedy Central struck Diversity Day from a recent chronological broadcast of episodes from The Office. Asked by The Federalist why the episode did not air, Comedy Central declined to respond. Barstool Sports picked up on the episode's absence during a Sunday broadcast of the show's first season. An archived version of Comedy Central's listings for that day confirms it started airing the season with the pilot episode, then skipped straight to Healthcare, which originally aired third. Diversity Day did not appear on the network's Sunday schedule. Sports Illustrated writer Jim Triana noticed the same pattern last year, tweeting that Comedy Central removed Diversity Day from its rotation during a broadcast of The Office's first season. This is obviously intentional and absurd, but not remotely surprising. The Office previously edited out a scene from Dwight Christmas, in which Dwight appeared in blackface during an attempt to celebrate an authentic Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas. It was scrubbed from Netflix and Peacock. So I'm reading once again from The Federalist, and the writer here gives his own commentary. I like the way he's about to put this episode of Dwight Christmas. He says, "The point of the scene, of course, is to showcase offensive behavior. If we didn't all agree Dwight was behaving wrongly, there wouldn't be a joke. The effect is a reinforcement of our cultural boundaries regarding right and wrong." Well, again, that was a portion from The Federalist. He's right. They don't know how to laugh. All they know is how to feel offended through the lens of their hypersensitivity. Steve Carell himself, the star of The Office for 7 years, talked about this a while back, somewhat waffling, somewhat defending his program. He was kind of straddling the fence here. Here were his words. It looks like they were asking him about some kind of possible Office reboot. He says, "Apart from the fact that I just don't think that's a good idea, it might be impossible to do that show today and have people accept it the way it was accepted 10 years ago. The climate's different. I mean, the whole idea of that character, Michael Scott, so much of it was predicated on inappropriate behavior. I mean, he's certainly not a model boss. A lot of what is depicted on that show is completely wrong-minded. That's the point, you know? But I just don't know how that would fly now. There's a very high awareness of offensive things today, which is good for sure, but at the same time, when you take a character like that too literally, it doesn't really work." All right, my friends, let's unpack this. Diversity Day, the original episode in question, was a brilliant episode which helped set the tone of the program because, once again, it was only their second episode. What I loved about The Office was that it was a parody of reality shows. Since I can't stand reality shows, I love seeing them made fun of. I love seeing people say stupid things in front of the camera, only to catch themselves, try to clean it up, and in the process say something even stupider. And for this television project, loaded with genius satire, they created a small fictitious paper company, because in the age of laptops and internet, paper is an industry in decline. And instead of the typical boss whom people fear and try to impress, Steve Carell's Michael Scott was the boss who wanted to be loved. The boss who wanted his employees to be his friend. The boss with zero boundaries, zero self-awareness. A boss who thought he was funny and was instead offensive. We've all had that experience of somebody around us and they're just really proud of the way they're behaving and we just don't know how to tell them what we're all feeling like. Steve Carell was so convincing it was uncomfortable watching it, but it was also hilarious. His character, Michael Scott, and that paper company existed in Scranton. Scott was portrayed as an absolute moron, which reminds us of another moron who brags about being a working man from Scranton, Joe Biden. Sorry, I'll get off that depressing subject. Why talk about genuine buffoonery when we can return to fictitious buffoonery? Back to the office. Diversity Day was about an offensive joke Michael Scott told. Corporate heard about it, sent a sensitivity specialist to give a seminar, pretending he needed everyone to sign a statement after they finished the one-hour seminar. In reality, Scott was the only one who needed to sign it. The instructor made copies for the others so as not to embarrass Scott. He admits this to the cameras filming this reality show, which of course blows the cover and embarrasses Scott anyway. Look, I can't stand political correctness, and if this episode had been making fun of political correctness, that would have been just fine with me. But as it happens, this episode did not make fun of political correctness. It made fun of racism. It did not promote racism. It made fun of it. Michael Scott could not possibly have been portrayed in a more negative light. Unfortunately, that's not good enough anymore. We've still got to parse the actual words that came out of his mouth, regardless of how it's supposed to be portrayed. We must watch like a hawk every piece of dialogue, regardless of the purpose or humor of the dialogue. By the way, speaking against real racism, ironically, has nothing to do with all that phony, tiresome political correctness. The PC movement finds racism under every pear tree. When real racism is called out, it's not politically correct, it's just true. It's just appropriate to call it out. The Office was a hilarious sitcom. Now, in the interest of giving an accurate review, the series did take a nosedive quality-wise after Steve Carell left. But that wasn't because of inappropriate subject matter. It's just because artistically the actors were overacting, the writing staff changed. And frankly, it was heading that direction even during the last two seasons when Carell was still on board. They still had a handful of good episodes, season six, season seven. They also had a lot of clunkers those years, but seasons 1 through 5, the first five, were absolutely brilliant. How sad that a network like Comedy Central, claiming to be about comedy, they do call themselves Comedy Central, not Thought Police Central, Comedy Central. How ironic that a comedy network is caving to the cancel culture Thought Police. Either that, or they're doing a preemptive strike out of fear of the Thought Police headed their direction. My friends, it will not stop with this one episode. Take it from somebody who was an avid fan and who watches the reruns constantly. There are far more offensive episodes than Diversity Day. Offensive, so-called. I wouldn't be surprised if they remove the entire series. When will this self-righteous claptrap nitpicking stop? We must all be able to laugh at ourselves and laugh at others. I myself am a Christian apologist. I get frustrated when I hear fellow Christians defend their faith without any logic, or when Christians are unfairly portrayed. Be that as it may, in a hilarious episode of The Office called Fun Run, Michael Scott talks to the camera defending the existence of God. Here's his defense. Does God exist? If not, then why do we have so many churches? And who is Jesus' dad? One couldn't ask for a stupider depiction of a Christian defending his faith. I did not get offended. I laughed. Why? Because it was funny. Because when we can't laugh anymore, we take ourselves too seriously. They were making fun of one man and one lame argument. It was not intended as a treatise about the reliability of Christianity in general. Now, to be thorough on this point and balanced on this point, they do have a regular character named Angela, portrayed constantly as a hypocritical Christian, and in the eyes of Hollywood elitists, they undoubtedly think that all Christians act that way. They undoubtedly think she's typical of most Christians. In the case of Angela, the producers probably were trying to make a statement. I don't like that. I still wouldn't push to have them censored because I believe people are entitled to their opinions, even if, God forbid, the opinion is different than mine. As a matter of fact, The Office showed a lot of stuff that contradicts my own Christian standards. There was another comedy, very big in the early 70s, that could never be made today, All in the Family. Archie Bunker was portrayed as a stupid bigot who constantly argued with his liberal son-in-law. His remarks were funny because of their stupidity. They were not being condoned by the show's creator, Norman Lear. Even back then, when the show premiered, the CBS network, willing to take the risk, still felt the need to give a disclaimer announcement prior to each of the first few episodes. Here are the exact words of the disclaimer. The program you are about to see is All in the Family. It seeks to throw a humorous spotlight on our frailties, prejudices, and concerns. By making them a source of laughter, we hope to show, in a mature fashion, just how absurd they are. That was the disclaimer. We had to listen to that at the beginning of every episode for the first few weeks, as if people weren't intelligent enough to make that distinction for themselves. Well, some weren't. Even back then, I used to hear, oh, people aren't laughing at Archie Bunker. They're laughing with Archie Bunker. No, they weren't. Not really. It was a program ahead of its time, a show that talked about bigotry when most other television programs wouldn't even mention the subject. And today, you would not be able to air that program in most places. A more classic example is the novel Huck Finn. Mark Twain was relaying a distaste for the horrible institution of slavery, as seen through the eyes and narration of a young child from the South who was brought up to believe slavery was okay, but who began to observe otherwise when a slave man befriends him. However, Twain had people from the South talk the way they talked. That meant they used the N-word. How many schools and libraries have since banned Huck Finn on the basis of racism, when in reality, Huck Finn spoke out against racism before it became fashionable to speak against racism long, long before? Always the brave suffer. Always the courageous pay a price, while the cowardly pack of sheep muddle their way along. My friends, start speaking out, or soon there will be nothing left of our culture than a bland, boring life and a tyrannical government which, among other things, outlaws even laughter. And the only funny thing remaining will be a picture more sad than funny, our president mumbling, bumbling, and stumbling his way through a so-called press conference like Michael Scott. He comes from Scranton. I should apologize to everybody who really lives in Scranton. I feel for you. You would rather rally around the office than the man who holds the office of president. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Listen to this customer review of Bob Siegel's novel, Choice of the Lorelei. I saw this play on which the story is based many years ago. Elements of it have stayed with me over the years as it expanded my imagination about how things might have been in ancient times. It was also very exciting to see this story intersecting with the other works by the author. Very different stories, yet linked by a common element. I can hardly wait for more. Choice of the Lorelei, available in ebook or print copies from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. We are always happy to welcome Ruth Wise of Election Integrity Project California. The last time she was on, just a few weeks ago, I asked her to comment on the overwhelming reports of election fraud during the attempted recall of Governor Gavin Newsom. Tonight, she returns for an updated recap, at least whatever update she's allowed to share. Ruth is also going to talk about Election Integrity Project's stance against mail-in ballots recently voted into law permanently by our fantastic, incredible Sacramento Congress. Apparently, even the Republican leadership, so-called, is going along with this. So good to know that rhinos are alive and well. They are not an endangered species. Ruth Wise, welcome back to our program.
Oh, thank you, Bob. It's always such a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to be with you, too, even though it's not usually pleasurable circumstances that's occasioning it. So, Ruth, I'll ask the question, what's the good news in the world?
Well, I thought I would recap for you tonight some of the major issues that surfaced in the 2021 gubernatorial recall election. A lot of them are the same kind of thing that surface every election, but it indicates that California is still very much in a situation where we have a lot of election corruption. And my real concern is that both sides of the aisle are reassuring us that nothing is wrong, that there everything is fine, that nothing went wrong. And our evidence to the contrary, it's very frustrating that we can't get anybody to listen. But very quickly, what we saw significantly in 2021 was number one on the list is a cursory signature verification, because people are reassured that when they turn in their vote by mail ballot, it's safe because nobody could vote in their name because the signature verification is going to catch any ballot that comes in unreasonably or illegally. And yet that just isn't true. If you show up and watch for 10 minutes the way that they verify signatures, you would begin to realize that this is just not a way to make sure that the ballots are coming from a legitimate voter. And it's very frustrating. And it's not the registrars of voters' fault. They have to go with the regulations that are promulgated by the Secretary of State. And these regulations, which have now been signed into law because the legislature picked them up and put them into the last couple of laws that were signed into law, we now have some very, very bad signature verification. And that means that practically any signature will pass, that it's very difficult to throw anything out. In addition, we had a lot of ballots come back, unreasonable numbers that our observers saw of undeliverable ballots, which, again, is testimony to the voter rolls being so out of control and too many people on the voter rolls that don't need to be there. But all these undeliverable ballots, there were concerns about what they were going to do with them, how they would handle them, how they would use them to clean the voter rolls. Many of them came back unstamped. So there were some questions we're still working through as to how we're going to use those undeliverable ballots to help rather than to harm the issue. We also had, as always, a lot of people reporting that they got two or more ballots delivered in their name. Many people who got ballots delivered that were at their address, but addressed to people they did not know and never have known, as well as deceased relatives and friends. We got a lot of people calling from out of state, saying, you know what, I haven't heard from California in 10 years, but suddenly I got a ballot.
Oh, amazing.
Suddenly I got a text message from a Secretary of State.
And how about all those relatives that rise from the dead every election year, Ruth? People say they don't believe in the resurrection. We see it all the time.
We absolutely do. It's very, very astonishing how these people rotate off the voter rolls and then rotate back on. One of the problems that surfaced this time was the ballot design or the layout. And what people don't understand is that state does not send out the ballot. Every single county designs its own ballot. designs the layout of its own ballot, and then it's printed by the vendor that they engage. And some of these ballots were designed, it appeared as if they were attempting to be designed so that people could not find the name of the number one candidate who was, designed to win if the election went in the favor of the yes vote for the removal of the current governor, by putting that name on the back side of the ballot instead of the front side of the ballot. Counties like San Diego had everything on the front side of the ballot, so it was well designed, but a lot of other counties did other things. We also had that big, fancy, well-publicized thing about the L.A. County ballots, and a few other counties as well, having holes in the envelopes that were positioned directly over to be able to tell whether the person voted yes or no on the recall without opening the envelope, so that before we decided whether to count that vote, we could see the vote that was inside because it went right through that
hole. It could mysteriously disappear if they didn't like what it said.
Mysteriously. Now, let me assure people, these holes in those envelopes have always been there. They are designed so that after the ballot is removed from the envelope, they can do a double check on all the envelopes quickly to make sure there's no ballot left inside the envelope. So there is a purpose for the hole, but it has never been aligned with a vote until this election. And so we had a lot of people concerned about that, and rightfully so. Then, of course, more than normal of the people who showed up to vote in person were told, oh, you've already voted. Your vote-by-mail ballot has already been cast. And, of course, these people were holding their vote-by-mail ballot in their hand, unvoted, and how could they have been registered as a person who'd already voted? And our answer was that prior to the election, we had sent out this information to all of the state officials that there were quite a few people who were on the voter rolls twice with two separate ID numbers, but clearly the same person. And we believe that that was what happened, that a lot of those second ballots got waylaid and they were voted in that person's name. So that's a big concern and it will continue. We had situations where voters don't know what's going on because everything's changing so fast that every time they go to an election, they don't recognize it from the last election because everything is changing. And one of those things were the ballot marking devices. And so people were marking their ballot on a ballot marking device, and it was printing their ballot. What you're supposed to do with that ballot is make sure it reads correctly, and then you put it in a box so it can go back and be counted. But there were some places where they were telling the voters, oh, this is your receipt. So the people walked out of the polling location with their ballot in their hand, thinking they had voted, and they had not. So we had to get on the registrars, and they had to spend all day calling all of those voters and telling them to go back and turn their ballot in. It was a mess. And so, you know, that's a lack of education of the people who work in the polls, plain and simple. And then, of course, people who really wanted to vote in person because they know that's the safest way to do it were strong-armed at the polls. Oh, no, just turn in your ballot here. You don't want to walk inside there. Just give us your vote-by-mail ballot. Turn in your vote-by-mail ballot. And so a lot of people felt that they weren't allowed to vote in person, even though that's what they had intended to do. So that's just a recap of some of the major issues that were reported when both sides of the aisle are telling us there were no problems at all, and everything was just fine in the selection.
Yeah.
So we still have a lot of work to do, Bob, a lot of work.
We sure do. Now, Ruth, I realize that merely finding examples, and in this case, many, many examples of election fraud, is not the same as proof that Governor Newsom stole the election. I also accept that as to what you can say, you're working for a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse any one of the candidates. My gut still tells me this thing was stolen. For one thing, Newsom seems very emboldened for a man whose removal did get the necessary signatures for a recall to be put on the ballot. Now, that doesn't happen easily. Governors know that. And it's public knowledge that a lot of Democrats and independents were part of that petition. Had this been a fair election, one would think that despite him being obviously grateful to avoid the recall, he would still interpret that successful petition as a warning to back off with some of his tyrannical measures. But he doesn't seem worried at all. He seems to be doubling down. And then there was the election process itself, the mail-in ballots, ballots going out, the ballot harvesting, all in the name of COVID-19 for our protection. And yet now, now that has been codified into law in Sacramento. That's now going to become the permanent way we do elections with or without COVID. That sounds to me like someone in Sacramento knows something about how successful the mail-in, mail-out ballot debacle truly was. Any thoughts or response to my idea that you feel free to share?
Absolutely, Bob. I think you hit the nail right on the head. That they've given up the pretense of we're doing this in the name of COVID. We're now doing it in the name of how successful, in quotes, of course, everything really is. And it has been successful from their point of view. And yes, my gut level, I'm not going to make a comment on whether or not Newsom actually won that election, but my comment would be that whatever the results were, they were not correctly reflecting the sentiments of the voice of the people of California and the way that they voted. Whether or not they voted enough to overturn him, I have no comment on. But we do know that there was a lot of situations that involved manipulation of the election because of all these laws that have been put in place over the years. And then the big push during the COVID time to just take advantage of that to put a whole lot of laws into place. The issue in California is not election integrity. The issue in California is not voter integrity, and it's not fraud. The issue is election corruption, the corruption of the entire process, which allows the process to determine the winner and the loser rather than the voters, and allow some fraud to get in because the protections have been disappeared and it's very difficult to see how much is fraud and how much is not. But we're not talking about fraud here. We're talking about the corruption of the entire system, and it's right laid at the foot of the legislature.
Well, I suppose that Newsom really did win fair and square. I also suppose that possibly elephants can fly. Let me ask you a question. What is the advantage to the GOP? I'm assuming that they're very aware. They can't be that stupid. They see the corruption. What is the upshot to them to act like this was a fair election? Because I understand you're getting a lot of resistance from the GOP in California.
We are getting a lot of resistance from them because they don't like our stance on vote by mail. I think basically once they passed the ballot harvesting law, that the people that had benefited the most from that really swept the 2018 election. And then the other side said, oh, well, all we have to do is do the same thing they did. And somehow they are deluded into believing that they can ballot harvest better than the other side. And when you take a look at the imbalance of funding for volunteers, that sort of thing, it's ridiculous to assume you can ballot harvest the same way that the other side does and equal out. Plus, our stance is that two rights don't make a wrong. Ballot harvesting is wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right, is what I meant to say. When you ballot harvest, it's wrong. It's immoral. And it's not a democratic process. Now, when the other side says, well, instead of trying to get rid of ballot harvesting because it is wrong, we're just going to do it better than the other side. Now you're just trying to do the wrong thing better than the other side's doing it. And it's a disaster. So when someone comes along like EIPCA and tries to point out the truth of why ballot harvesting and why voting by mail in general is inadvisable, then you get a big thunderstorm and people get all upset because they still think that they could do it better. And now that they're so far into that, it's like being so far across the river that they either have to cross to the other side or go back, but it's the same distance. And so they can't admit that they were wrong and come back and say, okay, let's do it the other way. They're now all in, Bob. They are all in. And so they're going to have to continue with their point of view, and it's wrong. And it will never, ever be to the benefit of the voters of California as long as we're continuing with this process.
It sure sounds that way. In our last minute, you were talking about a lawsuit last time I had you on the program. Any update about that?
Yes, the update is that we have appealed to the Ninth Circuit. We are, that's a long process. We don't have any timeline on it, but the Ninth Circuit is looking at our lawsuit to determine whether or not it was improperly dismissed. And if they rule in our favor, it will go back down to the district court and they will now hear the case. If it is ruled not in our favor, it will go to the Supreme Court. So either way, we're still in the middle of it and We truly believe that we will come out victorious in this to the benefit of every voter in the state of California and a lot of voters in the rest of the nation.
Well, if I had money to put down in Vegas, I'd say that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is not going to go along with election integrity, but we'll see. Ruth, it's always a pleasure having you on our program.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, we'll talk to you again really soon.
Okay.
Reader enthusiasm for the Dangerous Christmas Ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading the Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Always good to be joined on the air by my producer, who's as good on the air as on the other side of the booth. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
Man, oh man, you are such an, you're feeding my ego so much here, let me tell you.
Well, I'll leave it up to God to humble you. That's God's department.
No.
I'll feed the ego, good cop, bad cop.
There we go. I'll take it. All right. So we'll start with some good news here. The White House on Friday announced that they will lift a COVID-19 travel restriction for fully vaccinated international visitors starting on November 8th. This has now broken a 21-month period where there was nobody from internationals that could enter into the United States for travel reasons. The U.S. will also accept mixed doses of vaccines if you are vaccinated.
And oh, that's darn nice of them.
Exactly.
Are they willing to accept mixed doses?
Wow. I didn't know that they were going to.
They're so magnanimous, the crumbs they throw us from the table. I'm just in awe.
I know. And other news also with that would be there's no quarantining that would be necessary with this, too. I was kind of worried because a lot of traveling early on during the COVID restriction is you still had a quarantine for 2 weeks, and thus you didn't really have a vacation. You just stayed in.
Well, Uncle Joe's just great about the way he treats everybody else in the world. What about us?
Exactly.
What about those of us that live here as citizens?
Exactly. But I guess I'll take, like you said, I'll take the little breadcrumbs where needed.
Oh, yeah. When Biden accidentally does something right, let's accept it.
Right. All right. So next news story, you're going to like this one about a little bit. Hopefully we'll see.
Thank you.
I love the movie, but if you're talking about the new twist in the comic book,
uh-oh.
Is that where you're headed?
That's where I was going with it. Yeah, right, so
well, give us the wonderful news.
So we got the two news stories about, based on the Superman comics that are coming out. The original motto of Superman was, do you remember?
Well, truth, justice, and the American way. And
exactly.
They're taking out the American way.
Exactly. Now it's going to be truth, justice, and a better tomorrow.
Oh, I thought he was going to say in a better Green Deal for tomorrow.
At least they like that. The CEO of DC Comics, Jim Lee, stated that the new motto is supposed to reflect global storylines instead of focusing just on American storylines.
The guy was supposed to be from another planet, Krypton. We got the whole universe out there, and they got to get global.
Exactly. And then the other news, too, Superman's son in the comics is now supposed to be bisexual.
The son
as
of
well.
Him and Lois Lane. And he's and there's a picture that's been floating around everywhere of him making out with a guy.
Now, is that really true? Like, is that well, in the comics, or is this just like one of those?
I've seen the picture on the news on TV. I've assumed it's from the comics, but I have not picked up one of the comic books in my hand.
Exactly.
So I guess I'd have to technically.
I'll just wait till the comics
I'll just guess
come
I'll
out,
technically I say I don't know, but they're certainly showing that on TV. And
yeah, this is just another version of PC culture coming out, basically.
Oh, absolutely. And people are just scared to death. They had a comedian on the Greg Gutfeld show, and even a conservative gay person. I don't agree with his lifestyle, but still, he was fair enough to say, can't you just leave Superman alone? If you want to have a gay superhero, have a new guy. Why go back and revisit the old ones? So
I know. I like the original Superman. And again, I personally was never offended with the truth, justice, and the American way. I think it's fine.
And
personally.
They had a great line in Superman 1, the Christopher Reeve one, where he tells Lois he's here for truth, justice, and the American way. She goes, you're going to be fighting every politician in Washington. Boy,
how convenient is
this?
Wow,
back in the days when even Superman spoke the actual truth.
Yeah. And quickly before the last story for you, the San Diego High School District has announced that they will ban critical race theory from teachings now.
And what state are they in?
They're in North County of San Diego.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Huge, huge news there. But unfortunately, I can't go into much detail since.
And of course, people try to conflate that and say that means they don't care about racial relations. And that's not what critical race theory is about. Critical race theory is about walking in and telling even kids in the first grade that if they're white, they should feel bad about their privilege. It's dividing people. It's not uniting people. We made a lot of progress in the late 60s and early 70s. I'm not a big fan of the hippie communes and things, but it is fun to look back at Woodstock and places like that. And there's black people and white people holding hands and singing Kumbaya. We've lost something. Critical race theory has more in common with George Wallace and the Dixiecrat segregationists than they have with Martin Luther King. Not by the color of his skin, the character. All right. Well, Brendan, it's good to have you as always. We will see you next week, everybody, on The Bob Siegel Show.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.